All right, well, you got to get your Bibles and go to Exodus 5. We're going to pick up in Exodus 5, verses 1 and 2. And lesson 21 is where we're at. And this is what it says in Exodus 5, 1 and 2. And after this presentation to Israel's leaders, Moses and Aaron went and spoke to Pharaoh, and they told him, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Let my people go, so that they may hold a festival in my honor in the wilderness." And Pharaoh's response, "Is that so?" he asked. "And who is this Lord? Why should I listen to him and let Israel go? I don't know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go." In those two verses, what do we find out about Pharaoh, and what do we find out about God?
Well, we know that Pharaoh's not a righteous man.
He's not a righteous man, right? He doesn't know who this Lord is, because
right.
He asks him a question: "Who is this Lord?" What is it? And when you think of Pharaoh, who would he have called his Lord? What would he have put as his God? He would have put things in place of God. He would have the Egyptians. We talked a little bit last week. They were an idolatrous nation. They worshipped multiple gods. They would have worshipped the Nile River. They would have worshipped the sun, the moon. I think I said last week that in Hawaii, where my parents are at, they still do that. They worship, the native Hawaiian people still do that. They still worship three gods. It's the sun god, the water, the ocean god, and then the land god. So they still have these gods that they worship. I kind of like put myself in here, wow, okay, so that was taking place 1,500, 2,000 years after God created the earth. Here we are now, 6,000 plus years later, and we're still got the same thing going on. But and I wonder if a lot of people would say the same thing and ask the same question that Pharaoh would ask: "Who is this Lord?" So think about that for a minute. And so then there's something else in verse 1, though, that God wanted his people to do.
God
said, using Moses and Aaron, saying, "Hey, I want you to let my people go." Right? So we see the heart of God, that he wants to fulfill what he promised to Abraham years ago. He wanted to make sure that the people get out. But he going to let them go out into the wilderness for just a couple days, right? A festival. I mean, that's just a short period of time, is what Moses and Aaron asked. And I find that very interesting. It says that Moses and Aaron said that. I almost get this picture that Moses and Aaron are afraid to go in front of Pharaoh and say, "Let my people go." So they say, "Can you just let us go off into the wilderness for 3 days?" I don't know. That's what they said. This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Now they're saying that's what God told them to say, that, "Hey, let them go out into the wilderness." I don't know. Does anybody have a different translation that words it a little differently there?
This says, "Let my people go, so they may hold a feast for me in the desert."
Okay, so it says the same thing then. Okay, and so they this is what you have here, and why did God choose the children of Israel? Why wouldn't God choose Egypt or any other nation for the deliverer to come through? Why did he choose the children of Israel?
They were
the ones that cried out to him. But I'm looking for a different...
That was his promise to Abraham.
Right. And so God had to continue to carry on that. Yeah, it was God's promise to Abraham. All right, so does this mean that God doesn't care about the Egyptians?
Mm,
Well, I mean, you think about it here. He's got the Egyptians. He's telling them to let them go. I mean, if the children of Israel get freed up, then Egypt doesn't have all their slaves to continue to build their great country, their nation, right? So, I mean, wouldn't that be like God saying, hey, you know what? I don't care about you anymore. I'm going to move this people, my people, on and forget you, Egyptians. Is that what God was saying?
I would say God didn't care about them.
Yeah. Yeah, now, I mean, we don't know what would have happened, but it would have been really cool if Pharaoh would have said, you know what, I want to know this God. Yeah, let's work together and let's see what, wonder what God would have done then. We don't know that, but that's exactly what took place there.
And you often talk about the whole people. Then I wonder, is there individuals who knew God? Like, our whole country doesn't follow God. We inside this country, there's individuals of us who do.
Yeah. And it would probably, you wonder if it would be the same thing with the children of Israel. Mm-hmm. You know, did they just, some of them lose faith in God and not trust Him anymore? There's no way. Our family's been in captivity for 400 years, you know. And then there was a select few that God said. And it could be the same. And we will, I think if we don't read it here, you will see later on that when the children of Israel are able to leave Egypt, there are people who follow them, who go with them, who recognize that, hey, this God is a God I want to follow. Now, did they stay with them forever? I don't know, but they left with them, and we'll see that. We're going to skip this rest of the chapter and go all the way over to chapter 6 in Exodus. So if someone wants to get chapter 6, and we're going to read verses 1 through 8.
But the Lord replied to Moses, now you are going to see what I will do to Pharaoh. He will let them go because of my strong hand. He will drive them out of his land because of my strong hand. Then God spoke to Moses, telling him, I am Yahweh. I appeared to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as God Almighty. But I did not reveal my name, Yahweh, to them. I also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land they lived in as foreigners. Furthermore, I have heard the groaning of the Israelites, whom the Egyptians are forcing to work as slaves. I have remembered my covenant. Therefore, tell the Israelites, I am Yahweh, and I will deliver you from the forces of the Egyptians and free you from slavery to them. I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and great acts of judgment. I will take you as my people, and I will be your God. You will know that I am Yahweh your God, who delivered you from the forced labor of the Egyptians. I will bring you to the land that I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and I will give it to you as a possession. I am Yahweh.
Okay, in these verses, what did they have to say about God and His plan to show His power to Egypt?
Basically, He's of His word.
He's of His word? Mm-hmm. And He was going to redeem them in verse 6 He says, I'm going to redeem him with a powerful arm and great acts of judgment. He's going to pull them out of there. You've got to remember, when Moses and them had to go back to God, and they were probably a little frustrated because the end of chapter 5 talks about when they went to Him and they raised their quotas. They began to ask Him, why in the world haven't you, your quotas are going back. And they took away all the straw and all the materials. They had to make everything, had to go gather all that stuff. Where before, the Egyptians were giving them straw to make the bricks and the mortar. And they now forced them to go find the straw. And they still couldn't, they still had to maintain the quota. So now they had to do double work. In other words, they had to go out and find the straw and bring it in. So it was a lot more involved. And so they were getting a little down, like, I thought you were going to deliver us, and yet we just got hammered with all this extra work. And so God's reaffirming His promise to them, and then He's going to do it through a powerful means. And it was His plan to reveal to all the nations around them His power. Imagine when you leave a country, like the children of Israel leaving Egypt, and you're heading to a different land, Canaan, where God's promised, and everybody sees this million-man nation coming, and, well, it's approximately what they said, but approximately 1 million people leaving to go into another nation. And you got a lot of people and all the other nations over there hear about this God that freed you from Egypt. And that word is going to move on. So we skip through the rest of chapter 6, and it gives the ancestors of Moses and Aaron there. It kind of breaks it up a little bit, goes on a little bit further, and then we pick up in chapter 7, verses 4 through 5. At the beginning of this here, we have them actually taking, and we see what happens. So someone in chapter 7, verses 4 through 5.
But Pharaoh will not come to Egypt, so that I may lay my hand on Egypt and bring my armies and my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great judgments. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord, when I stretch out my hand on Egypt and bring out the children of Israel from among them.
Okay, so what does this tell you about God? He brings justice, yeah. There's something else in here, though, that I want you to see about God and what he, in those verses.
He predicts that Pharaoh will not hearken unto his word.
Yeah, so what does that tell you he knows about Pharaoh?
He knows what he's going to do.
Yeah, so God knows our hearts. God knows even the Egyptians' hearts who don't believe in him. He knows their hearts. So he knows what Pharaoh's going to do ahead of time, and you kind of remember when he told Moses that, too, way back in the burning bush, right? We have this same thing going on there. And then skip over one verse. I'll just quickly jump over to Exodus 9, verse 16. It says, kind of a follow-up with that, it says this, "But I have spared you for a purpose to show you my power and to spread my fame throughout the earth." That God was doing this and letting Pharaoh harden his heart, versus just making Pharaoh turn his heart and let him go. He wanted to let his name be known throughout the entire earth. That's one of the reasons why God did this. Does that mean that God made Pharaoh disobey him? No? Why not?
He had a choice.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, a couple of verses before that, which we didn't read, says that the description there, the way the verse is, that I will make Pharaoh's heart stubborn. So, in other words, did God? Let me rephrase this. Did God make Pharaoh disobey him? In other words, why could God do that?
But earlier, when Pharaoh said that he didn't know God,
mm-hmm.
I thought right away, like, why do we not know him? You know, if he created us for his purpose, shouldn't he know him? But then I thought, well, maybe he meant he didn't know him intimately. Like, he knew of him,
mm-hmm.
but he didn't know him, like, he didn't have a relationship with him.
There was no
connection. That would have been his choice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's the stubborn.
That's
yes.
the stubborn part.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Was Pharaoh was a position? In other words, like the president, that's not who would have been his real name. Because the Pharaoh would have been a god of himself.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm correct, in the Egyptian culture, they were.
Yes. Pharaoh is just the name of the position, right?
Yeah.
I don't know which Pharaoh. Was this Pharaoh Ramses? Was it?
And
not sure.
They were God too. They considered themselves.
Yeah, people would have worshipped him.
Yeah.
And they would have said that he is the God of. Yeah. Yeah, and so we have this lack of intimacy with God. He may have known about God. He may have had some sort of recollection of something greater than himself out there. But he didn't have a relationship with him. The reason I ask the question is, would God make someone disobey against his word? I often wonder about that. If God would say that, what does that tell? If God was to do that to Pharaoh and make Pharaoh disobey him intentionally, what does that tell us about God's character? Or would be about God's character?
I'm not sure about that answer, but the reason might be so that he may eventually turn.
Would you, if God told you to go do something that you knew was wrong,
God wouldn't tell me to do something that was wrong.
Yeah, I don't think God would.
That's right. If he would, in other words, let's play out by, let's say if God would, what would your opinion of God be then?
Then
your view of God.
He
wouldn't be holy. He cannot be God if he's going to ask somebody to do something that goes against his word, right? And that goes against the character of God. And sometimes people might use that in talking about this passage. Well, God, because it says that God's going to allow his heart to be hardened. He's going to let him refuse instead of forcing Pharaoh to do something. He wants to let his power know. And some people, I've heard people say that, well, that means that God went against his character. And that's not the case. God cannot go against his character, and he will not make us do something. It's our choice. So we have a free will.
It looked like in chapter 15, it looks like all along he was trying to get Pharaoh to change his heart.
Yeah, over and over again, right?
Because in verse 15, then it says, by now, he could have wiped them clean off the face of the earth.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, he could have done it right off ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, he was...
He was more patient than he was.
Sure.
Yeah, he was trying to give him...
Yeah, and we'll see that here. He's going to have 10 plagues,
right,
giving him 10 opportunities to change his mind. Kind of like Moses. I'm going to give you 5 chances or 6 chances,
right,
to do what I ask you to do. You know, before I really tell you what they want you to do. So Moses had to surrender too. When you think about this, and these 9 plagues as we go through them, I want you to think about this question of why the Lord protected Israel through all these plagues. In other words, God put the plagues on the children of Egypt, but not on the Israelites. The Israelites were not a part of the plague. So you have to picture this. The Israelites are here in the land of Goshen, it says, and Egypt is over here. So I don't know if our map showed that last time, but in those two areas, we're so close together, and yet when we go through each one of these plagues, none of the Egyptians' plagues that were on them affected the children of Israel, except for the last one, when we get to it, would have affected the children of Israel if they didn't obey. So I want to think about that as we go through these. Alright, so let's look at... And think about that question. All right. Exodus 9, 6 through 7. And then we're going to read 10, 22 through 23. Okay, so here's the plague, 6 through 7.
So the Lord did this thing on the next day, and all the livestock of Egypt died, but of the livestock of the children of Israel, not one died. Then Pharaoh said, and indeed, not even one of the livestock of the Israelites was dead, but the heart of Pharaoh became hard, and he did not let the people go.
So he just wiped out every single bit of the livestock. Everything. Did you read 10 or 22 and 23 yet?
No.
That's the next one. Well, it's not the neck. There's a couple more in between there.
So do you want 22 and 23? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven and let there be hail throughout the land of Egypt, on man and beast and every plant of the field in the land of Egypt. So Moses stretched out his staff toward heaven, and the Lord sent thunder and hail. Lightning struck the earth, and the Lord rained hail on the land of Egypt.
Wow. So in these two plagues, they didn't touch the children of Israel. Now picture Dover in utter darkness, and you go to Felton or Smyrna, close towns beside us, and it's all bright. Huh?
I don't
want to
go there.
Well, I mean, think about that, though. What does that tell you about God? He can control how the light comes onto this earth. You know what I mean? When you sit there and think about it, And you've got, there's a, the other plagues that are in between here that we talked about here. You had the plague of boils all over. That was the next one after the slaughtering of the donkeys and camels. And then you had the plague of the hail and the plague of locusts. And then in 10:22, they're about the plague of darkness. So you have these plagues that so far are falling upon the children, the Egyptians, and Pharaoh consistently hardens his heart each time. No, I refuse. I can't grasp that. I think I get tired after having all my servants getting boils all over them and having to. You've ever seen boils? I mean, it's pretty harsh stuff to your body. I mean, it leaves scars. And then the darkness comes upon the land for 3 days, and you have the locusts, and you have hail all over the place. And yet he continues over and over, hardens his heart. And when you think about that, when he's hardened his heart, what do you think is going? Well, what's the? I'm looking for a word that has to do with. Goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden. It's the same sin, one of the same reasons that Adam and Eve ate of the fruit. That you can see is prevalent and affects Pharaoh.
The same sin as to why they ate.
Yeah. What's at the root of the reason why they ate of the fruit?
Was it pride?
Pride, yes. And here you got, yeah, pride. Pride's the answer that I was looking for there with that. And here you got Pharaoh thinking he's God, and he has all these plagues coming at him. He's becoming arrogant. Oh, I don't care. I'm just going to continue to keep doing this over and over again. Let's read Exodus 10:28. Skip ahead there. I'm just behind myself.
Pharaoh said to Moses, "Get out of my sight. Make sure you do not appear before me again. The day you see my face, you will die."
Okay, so you have these plagues that take place, and we didn't cover every single plague there, but there's key plagues that they were talking about there. He gets to the point where now at plague 9, he gets there and he says, "You know what? If you ever come back in here again, I'm going to kill you. You're going to die. Don't ever see my face again." And let's read what 29, see what Moses' response said.
"Yes, as you say," Moses replied, "I will never appear before you again."
Okay. He doesn't want to, Moses said, "Okay, never mind, I won't go there anymore." So all those 9 plagues, and Pharaoh still refuses. But does anybody else know the other plagues? Why, we didn't actually say that, but anybody else know some of the other plagues?
The water.
There was frogs,
yeah.
The water came.
Yep, the Nile River turned water into blood. How about the gnats? You had flies. You had flies swarming everywhere. And the hail, when the hail fell, it also had brimstone or fire on the ground. Fire ran across the ground when the hail came down. And I found that was one part about the Moses movie that we talked about last week that I thought was pretty interesting, how they back then created graphics to have fire and hit the ground with hail and created a huge thing.
Does the Bible mention boils and hail before this passage?
No, not to my knowledge. It does not. Well, we had in Sodom and Gomorrah, we had fire and brimstone, which is a form of large stones that fell down, but they were full of fire on them. But a little different than just big hail. In Revelations, it talks about the size of hailstones before the Lord returns, of the size of up to around 100 pounds. So imagine a 100-pound rock falling from the sky. I mean, right now you've seen softball-sized ones, and you see the damage they do. But it talks about that. Yeah, but so you think about that here with that. So now we're ready to move into this last plague. And before we move into this last plague, when you think about this plague, there's some symbolisms in here that we still remember today. The children of Israel still remember this. This is a key pivotal point in their country, in their nation. And yet this key thing affects all the nations around us. We still remember this. So let's think about that. As we move forward, just remember that. So someone grab Exodus 11, verse 1, and then verses 4 through 7.
And the Lord said to Moses, I will bring one more plague on Pharaoh and on Egypt. Afterward, he will let you go from here. When he lets you go, he will surely drive you out of here altogether.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, verse 4 through 7.
Then Moses said, thus says the Lord, about midnight I will go out into the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sits on his throne, even to the firstborn of the female servant who is behind the handmill, and all the firstborn of the animals. Then there shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as was not like it before, nor shall be like it again. But against none of the children of Israel shall a dog move its tongue against man or beast, that you may know that the Lord does make a difference between the Egyptians and Israel.
Mm. Okay, so he's going to cause a huge plague. Now, not only is he going to wipe out all the livestock, but he is going to wipe out every single firstborn. The same thing that Pharaoh wanted to do to the Israelites. God's bringing that same plague back on. Now, I often thought these plagues happened one day, the next day after that, the next day, so 9 days, right? It gives the impression here that these plagues took place over a period of time. Can't tell you how long it took place, because if you read what it says there, it says that even the firstborn of all the livestock, which means that the Egyptians had to go out and get more livestock, because one of the plagues was God killed all their livestock, right? So they had to have time to go out and get more livestock. You know, where do they get those livestock from? Did they go get them from the steal them from the Israelites? Did they go to another neighboring? I don't know, but it had to give some impression that there's more livestock there. And it's also saying then the firstborn of the livestock are going to die. So, you know, they're saying, so in my mind, as I grew up, yeah, one plague after plague, but it seems to me that there was a span of time here. How much time? I can't tell you that. But just goes to think how much you can think about something for so long a period of time in your life, and then when you realize, oh, wait a minute, it might be a little longer than what I thought. You know what I mean? So he's got this here. And he tells the children of Israel that in their area it's going to be quiet. Not even a dog's going to bark in your area. And that you're going to know there's going to be a distinct difference, and that God is going to do something here. Now, let's skip over to chapter 12, where we're going to read chapter 12, 1 through 5. And let's see what God tells the children of Israel to do.
The Lord said to Moses and Aaron in Egypt, this month is to be for you the first month of your year. Tell the whole community of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, each man is to take a lamb for his family, one for each household. If any household is too small for the whole lamb, they must share one with their nearest neighbor, having taken into account the number of people there are. You are to determine the amount of lamb needed in accordance with what each person will eat. The animal you choose must be a year old male without defect, and you may take them from the sheep or the goats.
Okay, so we have the children of Israel here. God is now establishing something. Changes their calendar. You notice that? The beginning of their year now is going to fall on... Yes, it's going to fall on this month. So when this month comes about each year, that's the beginning of the Israelites' new year, not our January calendar. Okay, when the Passover takes place, that's when their calendar year.
Right.
And it's very important. That's a very important piece when you start studying the Bible. And I could go down a whole long rabbit trail here with, how we celebrate Christmas in December 25th. Well, everybody says, how do you know that's December 25th? Is when Jesus was born. Well, deliverer was born. And when you think about that, and how can you prove that? And, people do this and that. Well, when you use the Jewish calendar, and you go by that calendar instead of our calendar, and you start looking at all these things, you can't say the exact day that the deliverer was born, but you can come close to when the deliverer would come in the way we look at it. So that's for another food of thought there after we got the recording on. So that's not part of the lesson.
Well, the calendar wasn't set up. This calendar was set up by it wasn't set up for the Jewish.
Correct.
We didn't set up our calendar.
That's right, yes. And so we don't follow the Jewish calendar.
Right.
Yeah. But God put this in here for a reason. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why he tells them to change, because they're to be a people that are his. Mm-hmm. And so he wanted them to follow his way and not everybody else's way. So he gets to the thing, he tells them how to kill the lamb, right? He doesn't want any waste. What's that tell you about God?
He sees value in everything.
Yeah, he sees value in everything, but he didn't want to have them, just go kill the biggest firstborn goat or sheep, and you got five people in your family, and you're never going to eat it all, right? He didn't want to have waste. That's a pretty valuable piece of information that God wants to make sure that everything is... Be good stewards, and take responsibility for it. And then in verse 6, he says this: take special care of this chosen animal until the evening of the 14th day of the first month. Then the whole assembly of the community of Israel must slaughter their lamb or young goat at twilight. So he gives a specific day, a specific thing. So it's 14. So if 7 days are a week. So he went 2 weeks into when this animal was to be slaughtered. And they were to do it at twilight or in the evening. And the lamb was going to die, which means the lamb, when they slaughter him, what's going to happen? You kill something, what happens to it? Huh? Yeah, it bleeds. Yeah, it takes, and blood starts to flow. When you shoot a deer or you go out and kill a cow and to butcher the meat or any type of animal or wring a chicken's neck off, there's blood. And blood is shed, right? And why was, again, the shedding of that lamb's blood important? What does that remind us of? Or them? Well, it reminds us, not yet, because we don't know about him. And I've mentioned his name twice here tonight, but we don't know about him yet. But it reminds us what? That God demands
something to die.
Something has to die in order for the penalty to be paid for, right? So we have this thing. It's a reminder that the punishment of sin is death, right? So we have this constant reminder. So God's wanting the children of Israel. He doesn't stop there, though. He gives them a couple more instructions. And I'm jumping way ahead of myself here. All right, so verse 7. Someone read verse 7.
And then shall they take of the blood and strike it on the two sides of the post and on the upper doorpost of the houses wherein they shall be. Is that the right verse?
Yep, that's the right verse. And yeah, I got a picture up here of that someone drew, kind of representing it. So they were to put it on the doorpost and the, what we call it, what do you call this? I was going to call it the header part, but that's not what it is because we're on the outside of it. But it is the top part of the beam. And they were to smear around the door frames, on the top and around the sides of the door. And then he kind of stops there, and then that tells you, we're going to jump ahead to 22 to 23, but you can kind of see here, and it gives a description of what they're supposed to do, how they're supposed to cook the meat, what they're supposed to eat with it, that they are to make sure that they are fully dressed, that they have their sandals and their walking sticks in their hands, that they have this thing. For this is the Lord's Passover, and he explains to them that he's going to pass over. We'll come to that because we'll have a few verses here, but that's 22 through 23 says this. Drain the blood into a basin, then take a bundle of hyssop branches and dip it into the blood, and then brush it across the top and side of the door from your house. And no one may go out through the door until morning. For the Lord will pass through the land to strike down the Egyptians. But when he sees the blood on the top and sides of your doorframe, the Lord pass over your home. He will not permit his death angel to enter your house and strike you down. So, God's giving the children of Israel this instructions. And I didn't pull it up, but if you remember the movie, there's a picture where one of the men is running through the town in the Ten Commandments movie, and you can kind of see that they kind of portray it as a vapor coming through the town as a death angel, is like this smoke, you know, and that's God moving. You see it come out of the sky and come down like that. That's again man's image of that, but you see this man who gets inside one of the houses because he's the firstborn, and his life is spared because of that. And they knew this was a scary thing. And if you were outside and you were firstborn, not in the house, you were going to die. And that was Egyptian or if you didn't have blood on the doorpost. So I wonder how many Israelites didn't have that blood on the doorpost. Do you think every single Israelite followed these instructions? I don't know. We don't know. But if you look around us today, not everybody follows instructions of God today, right? Mm-hmm. And God said, if you don't do this, the angel of death is going to pass and will enter your home. Well, let's go back to, let me read verse 46 here, and then we'll go back to 12 through 14. Verse 46 says this. Each Passover lamb must be eaten in one house. Do not carry any of its meat outside and do not break any of its bones. Now, why did they not break any bones? It had to be perfect, right? This lamb had to be perfect. So remember that as we go further on in and getting into the New Testament, we start talking about the deliverer coming. That's an important fact or important piece of information that they were not supposed to break any bones of the lamb, the sacrifice that they were to offer. The sacrifice had to be perfect. Now let's jump back to 12 and through 14. Someone read 12 through 14.
For I will pass through the land of Egypt on that night, and will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt. I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. Now the blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and the plague shall not be on you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. So this day shall be to you a memorial. And you shall keep it a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You shall keep it as a feast by an everlasting ordinance.
Okay, so you have this. You have him telling them. Where else do you remember seeing this so far in the scriptures up to this point, where God gave other instructions, something similar to this that people had to follow? What were you saying? Yeah, Noah, right. God did the same thing. He said to Noah, you build the ark so many cubic feet this way, so many cubic feet this way. You only put two doors in it, right?
Yeah, one door.
One door, right. I want to make sure you're awake, Kendall. You only put one door in it, and he had a window, right? And that was it. But he had specific instructions. Here, God again So what does this tell us about God?
He's got an order.
He's got an order. Yep. And he wants things followed, right? So if God says, don't do this, we don't do it. If God says, don't do this, we don't do it, right? Well, unfortunately, that's the way it should be, but we oftentimes go and do what God doesn't want us to do. And but that's
sometimes
what he has.
We don't do what he doesn't.
That's true. That's very true, Lord. We are very true there. He also made the coverings for Adam and Eve out of a specific type of animal, right? And he did not want them fig leaves on them. Right. He had specific things that he wanted done. And so we have that. Everything is exactly to how God wants it done. And so here he is. He gave the children of Israel all these instructions. And he wants it followed out. Does God change today?
No.
No. He is still the same today. And without following specific things that God has laid out, we can never be accepted by him. Is that correct? Yeah. There's certain things that we have that has to take place in every person today, even 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years later, that in order to be accepted by God, must take place. It has to. That's the only way we can gain acceptance. Because that bridge, remember, that, well, we don't have this, the map up, I mean, the picture up there, but that bridge is separated. And there's coming a time where we're going to have to talk, we'll talk about that, the only way to be accepted by God, but there's things that take place in order for that to happen. So as we think about this, so here we are, I'm going to come back to that question. What if the Israelites, if there were some Israelites who said, I'm not going to kill the animal a certain way, I'm going to hang out, you know what, this is an animal, or this is a feast, God's going to do something great, I can feel it, let's just party it up and go kill me two animals, son. So, John, will you go kill me two sheep that are the firstborn, because we're going to really have a party tonight, we're just going to live it up. Well, what if that took place? Okay. Yeah, and so even if they had a lamb that had a blemish in it, they weren't obeying, right? And right, but you know, God loves us. He's merciful, right? He would have spared them because they were his children. Right? They didn't put all the blood on it, and they killed an extra lamb, or the lamb had a blemish or a spot on it, God would spare them.
Not this God.
Not this God. Not this God. And you would think, again, we don't know, the scripture doesn't tell us that, there's nothing in these stories that I was able to find that said that there were some children of Israel who rejected that saying. Although we do know later on that the Israelites were a pretty rebellious nation. They, even after God did great things for them, they still disobeyed God over and over again. And so I, you know, as I think about that, I would probably say there was probably some families that just said, you know what? This isn't right.
Doesn't it say earlier that not even dull bark, that nothing will do? It gives the impression that everyone's going to do it.
Yeah, it does. It does give that impression, right? That's going to be peace in the land. There's not going to be any of this. Yeah, I mean, that gives the impression. It could be. I don't know. Well, and I can't say the other way.
The nine plagues, I'd be listening.
I would too. I would think so. But you would think Pharaoh would have listened too, but he didn't. So I would venture to say that, yes, you would think so. But there's no way for me to say one way or the other that everybody, you know, right, did follow this. But we're going to assume that everybody did. Think about it like this. In our day in society, what happens when there's a sniper that goes out and he's just taking out people in our community? The police come by and they shut down the area and they say, don't go outside your homes, you know, there's, you know, until we get this person who's killing people, right? And you would think about that. Would you listen and stay inside your house?
Probably.
We probably would.
Would you
right?
have some that?
You would have some that would, correct? They would, well, let's go out and see if we can find them and help the police or you know, get my camera out now, my phone, and videotape, you know, this, you know, that's in our world today. That's why I'm saying I, you know, because the Israelites believed God's warning, they were going to obey him. But I'm not sure that I could say that all of them did. And I'm not saying that I'm sure that I could say that not all of them were saved, you know, but so you can leave it like that. Now let's read verse 28 and let's see what happens.
Then the Israelites went and did this. They did just as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron.
Okay, so it gives the impression here in this verse, right, that all of Israel did this, right?
Because it didn't say some of the
Israelites. It didn't say some, it says...
Or a few, or anything like that.
So it answers our question, correct?
It didn't say all either.
It didn't say all either, right? But it says the Israelites. So you get you're stuck with this. And again, we won't know that until we get to heaven. But and so here it is, the Israelites did this. Now let's read 29 through 30. And I want you to think about this. God gives us instructions to his people because he loves them. He withholds these instructions from the children of Egypt, all the Egyptians. And you'll get the play on this. Well, if God's such a loving God and he cares about people so much, why did he only go to the children of Israel and not to the Egyptians? So I want you to think about that as we go through these verses here, 29 through 30.
Now at midnight, the Lord struck every firstborn male in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on his throne to the firstborn of the prisoner who was in the den, and every firstborn of the livestock. During the night, Pharaoh got up, he along with all his officials and all the Egyptians, and there was a loud wailing throughout Egypt because there was no house without someone dead.
There was not a single house. So in our house, Seth and I would have died. I'm the firstborn, Seth's the firstborn. We would die. Both of us would have died. Anybody else firstborn in here? So she would have died. Naturally, she would die. So you think, you can hear that expression. But there was wailing through the whole thing. Can you imagine? Not a single house in Egypt was not affected by this. The wailing that would have, I mean, that would have just split a town, a city, a nation wide open with the pain that was going on through this country.
And I can't believe that the Israelites wouldn't have had some sorrow with that. I mean, even if they were disobedient towards God, we still have a heart for people. And it's not like they were like, yes, but I can't believe they were like, like it had to be sad for them too.
I would imagine so. It would have affected them emotionally, some sort of way. God keeps his promise. God keeps his word. God says, hey, you don't do this, this is going to take place. God is a God that says, hey, I want, when I say something, if I'm going to do it, it's going to be carried out. I'm going to make sure it gets done. That's the way God is. And so here he is with this whole thing. 31 through 33 says this. Pharaoh sent for Moses and Aaron during the night, and he shouts at him, get out, he ordered. Leave my people. Take the rest of the Israelites with you. Go, worship the Lord as you requested. Take your flocks, your herds, as you said, and be gone. Go, bless me as you leave. All the Egyptians urged the people of Israel to get out of the land as quickly as possible, for they thought, we will all die. So in the middle of the night, now we have to, they were instructed to get up and get out. Right away, that's get you out of our country. Hence the instructions, have your walking stick ready, have everything ready in your homes that you have. Eat a meal here, don't worry about it because you're not going to have time to take anything with you. Even the bread that they were to make was not to have yeast in it because it took time for it to rise and you had to do that. No, they were to make bread that was with no yeast and they were to take that. And during the Passover today, and in the time of the deliverer, there was during their 7-week feast, their festival of celebrating the Passover, there was not to be one trace of yeast found in all of Israel. They would clean their houses, make sure all the yeast was taken out of the house during that time. They would sweep it. They were to make sure that no yeast was in the bread. Because it was a truly a reminder, memorial, that, hey, this is what God asked us to do. And today we've kind of turned the Passover, or in our culture we call it Easter, because of the deliverer. But it's now changed to more of a different aspect. It's supposed to be a celebration, which it is, but it's not necessarily like the Jewish people still carry the Passover out, but we don't do that, and we shouldn't necessarily have to put the blood on the door and, you know, do these things. But we'll get to that a little bit later.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
In verse 32, where he tells him to take his flocks and his herd,
mm-hmm.
he said, leave. And my comma, and also bless me. Does is he asking to be blessed, or is he saying their leaving will be a blessing to him?
Yeah, my translation says, go, but bless me as you leave. I'm not sure. How's everybody else's translation? Yours says, go, and bless me, and bless me. Anybody
it says
have any?
Also bless me.
Also bless me. Yeah, that is a very interesting thing that he not only did he recognize that this God finally has got through to him,
mm-hmm.
but he recognized and says, look, if you are going to wipe out my country, bless me. Give me a blessing. Where else have we heard that phrase, give me a blessing, in the stories we've been going through? About Jacob. Jacob and Esau, you know, bless me, Dad. You know, Esau, even though he kind of had rejected God, he still wanted a blessing. And I think a lot of our culture today rejects God and yet still asks for a blessing. How many times have you ever run across somebody who doesn't necessarily believe in God, or they may believe in God, but they don't believe in the deliverer? And yet then when they're sick or something, they come to you and because they know you believe in God, and they say, hey, will you pray for me or pray with me? You've had that happen, right? I've had that happen too. Would you pray for me? And there's oftentimes people, employees will walk into my office and say, hey, could you pray for so-and-so? Could you pray for that? Because they know that we believe. And so in essence, they're asking for a blessing like Pharaoh. And so hopefully that blessing will eventually, your prayer will lead them to a repentance and a heart that longs to do that for themselves and not just ask for a blessing. And I think that's here and that. I don't know if that answers your question, Lori, but that is definitely something that God stuck in here for a reason. That not everybody who believes or who rejects God, they still want a blessing. People still want a blessing. Exodus, the last few verses here, 35 through verse 36, and then verse 51. Let's see what happens.
Now the children of Israel had done according to the word of Moses, and they had asked from the Egyptians articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing. And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they granted them what they requested. Thus they plundered the Egyptians.
Wow. So yes, we didn't actually cover that, but back earlier on, when he said that in the first part of chapter 11, Moses tells him, go ask of all your neighbors, your Egyptian neighbors, ask them for their gold, their jewelry, and for this. And they handed it to him. And here they are, because they're probably like, yeah, Pharaoh's resisting all this, but here, take it. Maybe your God will stop bringing all these plagues on us, whatever. They give it to him, and they strip them all. So they took all their wealth, and they fled. And then if you skip down to verse 56 here, or 51, but as you're skipping down there, if you read in between here, it talks about that there were about 600,000 men that left. That's why they say close to a million, because they numbered the men of fighting age. They didn't number the women and children. So figure, you know, if each man had a wife, that's 1.2 million. And if they had children, you know, that's where the number comes from. We don't know. I just know at least there were 600,000 men that would have been numbered. When you think about in between there, there was also, it says, a bunch of non-Israelites went with them with great flocks and herds of livestock. And that's found in verse 38, where it talks about that. And then verse 51 says this: on that very day, the Lord brought the people of Israel out of the land of Egypt like an army. What did God say he was going to do? He was going to free them with a...
A mighty hand.
I was going to say, my arm's not that mighty. I may need something. I'll be a little more stronger to get that through. But he freed them with his right hand, with his mighty hand. And God said that he was going to bring him out. And so now we have this answer to a promise that was given over 400 years prior to Abraham. The promise was that your children are going to be enslaved in Egypt, or in a foreign land, it says. And they're going to be there for 400 years. And here God answers their... He answers his promise. He fulfills it. He keeps it. And again, over and over again, and now they're completely gone. He brought them out of the land of Egypt, and he's going to lead them. So when you hear about all these things, what is the one thing that stuck out to you in this lesson about God's being a supreme God? An all-knowing, all-powerful God.
What stands out to me is that he's but he's very specific mm-hmm. of what he wants. And for you to get to the end of their grief, they had to follow the specifics. And that's the only way to really to be with God. You have to
mm-hmm.
follow his specifics.
Yeah.
His specifics.
And we'll see that that principle throughout all the way through until we get to the deliverer. And when we get to him, we're going to see the specifics that he lays out for that bridge to be connected, that separation. He'll
also
lay that out.
It also shows how powerful God is.
Ah, how powerful he is.
All their little gods, he's most powerful. It's wonder that Pharaoh didn't have a change of heart for all those plagues that God sent on him, but the Bible never said he did.
No.
Yes, he did.
No, and even here in the next lesson, we're going to see what happens right afterwards, how hard Pharaoh's heart was, because the next story that we're going to go into, the next piece of history, is it can't fathom it, because he again hardens his heart and tries to go do something, and we'll see that here. When you talk about how powerful our God is, I struggle with that myself sometimes. When you pray about a certain thing. God, could you just do this for me? I need this done. Can you please move on this? You know, I find myself being like the Israelites in slavery for 400 years because it seems like nothing's happening. And it's only been a week, or nothing happened. It's only been 2 weeks. And okay, God, all right, let's just stop. You ever feel like that? And but then the belief that, yes, I know God's powerful. I've seen him heal people. I've seen him do great things. I've seen him come through with answers to prayer. And then why do I doubt? Why do I question God's power? And that's the human nature in us, the sin nature that wrestles against the side that says, no, I truly believe that God can do what he says he can do. And all right, well, if there's nothing else, we're now here on the timeline. It's 1400, the Passover takes place 1400 B.C. We can't say what B.C. stands for, but we got the deliverer in there. It should say B.D., instead of B.C., but...